Blog Talk Radio.
For the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined by the coach once again, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Ken, are you doing okay today, or are you a little sad?
Little sad in Mudville, Joe, and you know why. You're just trying to pimp me a little bit. You know, there are a lot of Illinois fans who are happy today, Joe, but there are a lot of Purdue fans that are happy too, and that's fine. Because you know you're on top, you know you're important, you know you're successful when the other guys are happy when things don't go well. And you're one of the other guys. So to the IU fans out there, keep your head up. We'll talk about some of the things that went on in that game last night, some of the things that didn't go on in that game last night. And we'll listen to Joe get on us a little bit. And that's okay. He's speaking for the Purdue fans. And I know there are a lot of Illinois fans that are happy out there. And as ESPN has started with all their clips, another group rushes the court. I just hope that in the future, when number 300 in Division I beats number 299 in Division I, they don't rush the court.
Well, you know, as they say, the Illinois fans, they love watching it because the shot goes in every time.
Yeah, well, you know what, Joe? The shot does go in every time. But until Monday, you know who's number one in the country? Indiana University, the Hoosiers, the Hurrying Hoosiers. And, you know, Purdue isn't sniffing it. And Illinois, I will say this, and, you know, for Illinois, that was a huge, huge win because that they were on the other side of getting in. And now they're back. And a lot of people said, well, they beat Gonzaga and they beat Butler. But that was really early in the year. It was in the Maui tournament, and they had not played well, hadn't even played good, played soft. And for Indiana to go in there and lose, it makes it tough today. You know, I know a lot of Hoosier fans couldn't even watch SportsCenter because they didn't want to see it go in every time. And not only, Joe, did it go in, there was nobody even close as a guy hit a layup with 0.9 on the clock. And probably the thing that people forget is they almost hit a layup a couple of tenths of a second before that on a steal full court that ends up Oladipo coming out of nowhere and blocking it out of bounds. But Joe, I got to tell you, to see you so happy over someone else's struggle. What's that say about you? I don't know.
I'm not happy. Hey, I'm just saying, you know.
All in. Comment on Facebook. Comment on Twitter. Comment. Text his number. Let's get on Joe a little bit. I know I've already heard from our indie correspondent, Don Schultheis. He says, give him heck. In fact, he said, give him hell. Get all over him for it.
You know, Reese had a game the other night. And the funny thing is, his coach, Doug McWilliams, you know, he actually pulled the guy on an out-of-bounds play underneath the bucket, too. Someone stay under the bucket. Isn't that kind of fundamental, huh?
Oh, you know, and let's talk about that last play. And if I want to remind our listeners, you can go onto our Facebook page, Coach K and Joe Show, on Facebook, and we have the last 0.9 seconds up of the video. And it's kind of in slow-mo, at least it was on mine. So it kind of lets you see the movement. You know, we had Fred Sermersine, one of our listeners, and, you know, everybody has their thought of, do you guard the ball out of bounds, do you not? And coaches do it different ways. And Fred said, you know, he wouldn't have guarded it. I think that's what he meant. I always believed in guarding the ball. I saw too many teams grade school, high school, college, pro level, when they didn't guard the ball out of bounds, bad things happen. When you give the guy, the inbounder, a clear look at what he's doing, and it looked like he had a clear look last night, a clear look at where he can go with the ball, that's not good. And we've seen teams, you know, Luke Zeller talked about that on the show last week.
Yep, he did.
They didn't, the team they were playing in the state championship game didn't guard the ball out of bounds, and they were able to get it to Luke, and he pulled up and hit a phenomenal shot. Again, it was a phenomenal shot last night because it was a straight layup. But I think what IU's got to put somebody on the ball. He's got to shade towards the basket. He's got to be jumping and with those arms waving. And I thought maybe, and this is just my opinion, and people can disagree and they can call in, they can text, they can Facebook us with messages if they want. I think we overplayed the three-point shot. I think we were so worried about not letting them get a three. I think we should have been more worried about defending from the basket out towards the ball. Will Sheehy was way too far over on the other end of the court. A long lob pass to that guy in the corner. Will Sheehy, he's a really good athlete. He could have got to it. And had the guy cut across the lane, Will Sheehy would have been in help side and able to defend it. I think they overplayed the three-point shot towards the ball. I think two guys could have been handling that, and Cody should have been the release man to protect the basket in any situation. As the ball was, guys were moving, he should have been stepping and looking and seeing anything towards the lane, and he literally turned his back, and that's when the guy cut behind him. That shouldn't have happened. Watford got out of position. If you look at that video, Watford is ball side of his man and not on the side where he can protect the basket on a cut to the basket. I just think we got caught. And I don't know if it was anything to do with Coach Crean. Now, I also made the comment, Joe, that IU had two timeouts and they left them on the table. And there were some other listeners that made comments about that. And that's astute because that is important. I think easily one to two of those timeouts could have been used in the last 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, you know, don't you think also, you know, you're a coach, you coach with 0.9 seconds, you're going to have to catch it and release it right away.
You want to make sure is that you get a hand in the face and they don't get a good look. I mean, it's not like the three-pointer was going to beat them. A two-pointer beats them. A free throw beats them. I mean, we were in a tie game. So, for me, you've got to defend from the basket out because any point beats you. But at the end, should Tom Crean have called a timeout to make sure his defense was prepared? Well, he could have. Now, some people would say, well, Illinois didn't have any timeouts. You give him a chance to set up a play. That's true. You have to think about that. There's a strategy involved. Should they have called a timeout when they got the ball with just a few seconds left coming down the other end of the court? Well, maybe he felt like they were in momentum, was going the right way. But I do know this. There were several shots that IU took within the last 3 minutes that had no business taking that quickly. People can say, well, they were open. You know, an open shot doesn't mean it's a good shot. Open shot doesn't mean it's the best shot. So maybe a timeout could have been called to keep their heads in the game mentally. Hey, we're looking for the best shot. And, Joe, as you pointed out, Cody Zeller didn't touch that ball very much last parts of the game.
Yeah, when you have if not the best, one of the best players in the nation, you've got to be able to get them the ball. You got to do that. You got to maybe control Will a little bit. I know we've discussed that a little bit, and there's no place for that kind of stuff. I don't care if he's an IU, a Purdue, a Jasper. I don't care where it is. You know, the stare downs, the pump, putting your arms up and showing your muscles, that stuff. Just, you know, if you're a true, as I tell my kids, you know, like with Reese and Rafe, when they played football, Rafe kind of made a spectacle of himself after a touchdown. Act like you've been there. You don't need to call special attention to yourself, and that's what the players should do. And some of his antics lately have been crazy. Now, you know, one thing for our Indy correspondent Don Schulteis to think about, though, too, is when he comes on, is giving him a heads up. is I've been reading on IU message boards all week where a lot of people think that Cody and Oladipo aren't going.
Well,
going pro. I want him to already. He can strategize a plan. I want to hear his plan for what's going to happen to make the numbers work out if those two stay.
Well, we know that they won't work out, so you have to figure it out from there. But I want to get back to a point you made about Will Sheehy. The silly thing about last night was the announcers were making such a big deal about Will Sheehy. And I'm not saying he's not important to the team. He is important, and he's a good sixth man. But he really has to expand his understanding of the game when he's out there. What a good shot is versus an open shot. Because the odds are if he touches it, he's going to shoot it. And, you know, if you shoot enough, you will score. But the dunk that he got, I mean, the guy wasn't even defending him when he dunked it. It was a basic practice dunk. He came across the lane. Illinois wasn't there like usual. He went up and dunked it. He comes down, and he gets in the face of a guy that was 3 feet outside of the lane. He didn't even try to defend the dunk. And so I thought that was absolutely silly, a lack of discipline. And I think it's a bigger issue for Will, a lack of his real understanding of the game out there. And late in the game, we lost the basketball. I mean, there was just a series of things where I think one of those timeouts could have been taken in the last couple minutes and maybe got us a little bit more under control. But, you know, Coach Green, he's the coach. We're number one, at least until Monday. We've got some issues. We haven't beat a ranked team on the road. We haven't beat a good team on the road this year. And you know what? They don't play the NCAA tournament at Assembly Hall.
That's true. Also, Super Bowl, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the Harbaugh Bowl was pretty exciting. I felt bad for the Ravens when the lights went out. I don't know if Jackie Harbaugh was somewhere out there pulling some plugs or whatever over in the control room, but the lights went out, and I really did. I said it to my family. We watched the Super Bowl together every year. I said, this is going to help the 49ers. Of course, one of my sons disagrees with me. He's older now, so he likes to disagree with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't blame him. He says, no, it won't, and I think it absolutely did help the 49ers. Baltimore did not come out there and seem like they rested a little too much, and it made for a great game. And I don't think holding should have been called. I don't even think the ball was catchable. And so it's a great win for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, great comeback. The light fiasco was interesting. I heard that the show Revolution, have you ever watched that, Coach K?
Yes, I have.
I heard that they've got a promo maybe about the Super Bowl and the lights and et cetera, which would be kind of interesting. But, yeah, the lights and I don't know. If I was sitting in the stands, I'd be a little worried that maybe, you know, with not many people, maybe there might be a little terrorist stuff going on. I'd have been a little nervous. I don't know about you, but I would have been.
I'm sure when it first happened that they probably did. I know. I thought CBS, and you can say, well, how would they be prepared for that? Well, a big network like that ought to be prepared all the time. I thought they fumbled it a little bit early on. I really did. I thought they didn't know what to do, who to go to, back to the studio, how do we handle this. I think it's going to be something for everybody going forward in the future to be prepared for. And I got to tell you, Joe, and this is going to make some people mad who are looking for skin and music and all that, I could care less about that halftime show. I really could.
Just do away with it.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's way over the top. It just cuts into everything. You know, if you're watching the Super Bowl for the halftime show, then you're probably turning it off after the halftime show, and you're probably not even watching it during the halftime show. So I can't believe those 100 million people watching that Super Bowl aren't going to watch it if they don't have a big halftime show. Hey, Joe, just a reminder, technically, stay close to your mic because we're getting a little noise and things once in a while when you're talking. And we know that the vast majority of our listeners want to hear the wisdom, the sage wisdom of Joe, Boiler Joe, Purdue man, Joe Milligan.
Well, I mean, there's some smart people out there, and they realize that that Joe speaks the truth. So,
are we going to go to break and bring Walt Ferber back to talk a little girls' high school basketball sectional?
That's what we're going to do.
Are you ready to do that?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back. Coach, you there?
I am here.
I'll tell you what, Blog Talk Radio, they switched some stuff on us, and the ad is playing, but I'm hearing nothing. You aren't either, are you? So we'll go ahead and give Josh a plug. The commercial was supposed to be for Idea Fusion Media, and, you know, Josh can help you set up, you know, your website. He can take you from domain registration all the way to the finished product, and we totally recommend him. And you can go; he's got a link. You can go to www.jaspertodayonline and click on the banner, and you'll be able to learn a little bit more about the company and his contact information. So, Coach, I'm going to have to get Walt on the line. I'm going to have to give you a subject here.
Oh, you don't need to give me a subject. I'll take it from here. Because Michigan is waiting in the wings to be number one. So we'll talk a little bit about who wants to be number one until you get back. How about that?
And that would probably be a good subject for the Idea Fusion Media segment. So
yeah, this will make Josh Houchin, our advertiser with Idea Media Fusion, very happy. He's a big, big Michigan fan, and he was real quick to let us know that Michigan was waiting in the wings. We know that Kansas had a horrible, horrible loss the other night. Bill Self comes out. Bill Self is truly one of the outstanding coaches in college basketball. He comes out and he says it may have been the worst Kansas basketball team dating back to the James Naismith days. And I just thought that was really neat. Kansas did not play well, and they took it on the chin. Obviously, they would have been in a good position to move up. Florida was sitting there. Billy Donovan's group was sitting there, ready to be number one if IU didn't hold on to it. They get blasted by Arkansas and the Razorbacks. Blasted. They've also lost a key player. So what I call a very abnormal or weak SEC basketball league is probably going to at least feel like they've got a shot at coming after Florida with their injury. And, of course, Kentucky's playing a little bit better. But Florida had a chance to step up. I kind of look at being number one in college basketball right now as when we were younger, if you played King of the Hill, and as you were trying to get to the top of the hill to be King of the Hill, somebody behind you pulls your leg and pulls you down. Well, that's what college basketball is right now. You know, we don't see Kansas sitting up there for 5 weeks or Duke for 2 months. We're seeing just a constant flow of teams coming in and coming out the same week they go in. But Coach Beilein and the Maize and Gold of Michigan, or excuse me, Maize and Blue of Michigan, are in a position now to move back into that number one spot. And it won't be easy for them to keep it because they've got some really tough games coming up. So you kind of got to look at where college basketball is. Is it parity, or is it some people some teams that maybe aren't as good as we would like it to be, or as we think they are? Is IU really a number one team, number two team? They haven't shown it on the road. Is Michigan? Well, they have to show it on the road. Kansas, same way. Florida, Duke. I don't know that there's a clear choice, but Michigan is in a position to go back up to number one, and it bodes well for the Big Ten, folks. Illinois probably punched their ticket to get in the NCAA tournament if they just play decent the rest of the way. And, you know, you've got Michigan, Michigan State, IU, Minnesota trying to find a way in, Wisconsin holding on. So the Big Ten is well taken care of. So we're just going to have to see how this continues. You know, the one thing about Michigan, and I know some of our listeners don't like when I say it, they have got to solve their low post game. You know, we talk about getting the ball to the basket. They want to get the ball to the basket by the dribble only. And against the good teams that can defend and have help and have rotations, that's not going to be easy to do. And the other thing I noticed about Michigan, at least in their games against Ohio State and IU, was the perimeter shooting. Because they don't have the ability to play what I call a two-man game, where you can move guys in and out and get the ball into the post, screen down, kick out, kick back in, what they'll do is they'll stretch the defense by trying to shoot the ball from further out. And that's not going to get the job done. If you watch Trey Burke, just one of the very best players in the country, he really will start shooting the ball further out instead of trying to find a way to get the ball inside. And I really think that's going to be... I think it's going to be a problem for Michigan as they go on, especially on the road. But we'll see. You know, good coaches make adjustments. They find ways to get players to do some things that maybe they weren't doing. But we'll see what happens. But right now, we've got a battle for that number one. And Indiana really hurt themselves last night. That was a win they should have gotten at Illinois. And I think Illinois waited for Indiana to stomp down and kill the snake, kill the head, so to speak, break the head open, so to speak. We never did that. And we let them hang around. And when you're on the road, you just can't do that. So, Joe, have we got Walt available yet?
No, we don't. It's going to be a few minutes. Just keep rambling. We've got a few technical difficulties once again, and I'm hopefully getting him switched here real soon.
Well, that's our technical side. We work with the third party folks, and they've made some changes in their system, and it has not boded well for us on the Coach K and Joe show right now. But we'll stick with it. A couple of other things that have been going on. You know, we've got baseball coming up soon. Pitchers and catchers are going to be reporting to the Major League Baseball spring training workouts, with the rest of the position players soon to follow. And Jasper, Southern Indiana, is great. Scott Rowland, as of this morning, we have not heard whether he is coming back or not. Earlier this week, the Dodgers, who had reached out to Scott, Don Mattingly, the manager, Ned Coletti, GM, had all at least let Scott Rowland know the Dodgers were interested. It was reported over the course of the last couple days with Major League Baseball.com that Ned Coletti, general manager of the Dodgers, had told them that he had not had any conversations with Scott Rowland, and it appeared that maybe Scott was not going to be a third base option for the Dodgers going into this season. I was disappointed to hear that. I really thought the Dodgers would be a positive fit for Scott, in that they're really up in the air at their third base position, which would give Scott an opportunity to play a lot at third base. I also think he brings veteran leadership to a club that has talent, has outstanding pitching, has some good position players, some excellent hitting, and Ethier and Kemp and some of their other guys, and they're really in a position to really get something done this year. But I really think they need some veteran leadership on the field and in the clubhouse. And whatever Scott isn't physically today, he is mentally and in a leadership position, because he understands what it takes to go through the grind of a championship season. He understands what it takes that last month for a club to get into the playoffs. He's done it with Cincinnati. He's done it with St. Louis. And I don't think there's any doubt that adding him to the roster and having him around would help coach manager Don Mattingly with the players in the clubhouse and on the field. So I was disappointed to hear that. We'll see if we get anything done, if Scott gets anything done with the Cincinnati Reds and Walt Jocketty and whether he'll return or not. And, of course, the other option is he retires to spend more time with his family. Personally, I'm selfish about it. I'd like to see Scott continue to play. He's only going to be 38 in April. I know that, you know, his shoulder gives him some issues and sometimes his back, but he still can play D. He can still hit the ball when he's healthy. I just hate to see a guy leave too soon, even though others say, well, his best years are behind him. That doesn't matter to me. He still can play the game. And there's a lot of guys where your best years are behind you and you can still make an impact in your job, whether it's in sports or whether it's in your company or whether it's in the business you own or your sales position. You can still make an impact that helps the people around you. So we hope to hear something soon on Scott, Roland, and we're going to try to make sure the Coach K and Joe Show hears it as soon as possible and gets it out to the listeners. So we'll be bringing up Walt Ferber in just a minute or so. We're trying to get him on the line. We're having some technical difficulties. We'll talk a little bit about the girls' sectional at Jasper coming up. Jasper, of course, won a thriller against the Washington Lady Hatchets the other night in opening action. Free throws sealed the deal with a one-point victory for the Lady Cats. And Ryan Ernie, coach of the Wildcats, just done a great job with that program since he's taken over. And I got to tell you, he's a former player of mine when he was at Jasper. So we're excited for Ryan and
Kenny,
what he's been able to do with that
Kenny,
program. But last night, Thursday night in the state of Indiana, if you're a listener outside the state, was a big night for boys high school basketball around the state because the girls sectionals are taking place this weekend. So the boys were moved to the weekdays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and especially Thursday night. And down here in Evansville in the Pocket City, great game went on between Castle High School and Evansville Bossy. Of course, Evansville Bossy has Jaquan Lyle, one of the top, literally one of the top juniors ranked in the country. Perry Farrow, his running mate, is also getting Division I looks. And Castle has an outstanding team led by Blake Simmons, Division I recruit at U of E. And it was a great game. Bossy took it on the chin. Castle came away with the victory. I think Simmons went for near 30, or 30. Jaquan Lyle went for 30 and 14 rebounds. But Bossy came up short, and Castle got the big win. They will not meet in the sectional tournament because they are different classes. As you know, Indiana, about a decade ago, went to the multi-class system. So some of these outstanding teams and matchups we will not see in the state tournament, which is disappointing because that's when you find out what teams and what individual players are made of as they get into the tournament. So I think we've got our technical problems fixed. Joe, you back with us?
Yes, I've talked to Blog Talk Radio, and they got it fixed, and I apologize. I want to let everyone out there know that we are a third party has does this, and they've redesigned their website, and they fixed it again. So, yeah, I got Walt on the line, too, and Walt, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we finally got you. There
good.
You are.
Hey, Walt. Great to have you, buddy. We got girls' sectional action all weekend long. Of course, the boys, as I just told our listeners, the boys were moved to Thursday night action around the state, but the girls take center stage this weekend, and the Jasper Wildcats, directed by Ryan Ernie, are still in it after a pretty – it doesn't get any better than their victory against the Washington Hatchets.
Well, I tell you what, it's two premier teams – here in southern Indiana. Gretchen Miles does a heck of a job with that Washington Lady Hatchets program. And they've got one of the better ball players in the area in Allie Hunsinger. Of course, Jasper Ball State-bound Shelby Murder. When they played back at the start of the season at Washington, it was a one-point ball game. And Jasper came from behind in this game, and it ended up being a one-point game. Madison Ubelor hitting a big free throw at the end to actually give Jasper the win. And it was great. It was kind of like I was back in the 70s again. It was a packed house at the historic Cabby O'Neill Gymnasium. And, you know, everybody was hooting and hollering, and a big student section from all the schools there, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, it had to be. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's boys or girls action. It doesn't matter whether it's a packed gym or just a few. To those players out there, and they're playing in that type of a game, emotionally, mentally, physically, you're giving it your all, because you know what, Walt? If you don't win, you don't get to play anymore. And so that just had to be just a great way to start off Hoosier Hysteria on the girls' side.
Oh, you know, it was an outstanding ball game. And actually, you probably had, at least in theory, your two best teams going at it in that that game. But I tell you what, Ken, I was impressed, and you're going to see them in the first game. I was impressed with the Mitchell team. They've only had 5 losses on the year, and they ended up coming from behind to knock off Heritage Hills. That was a great game. Jasper's game with Washington is a great game. You know, Tori Summersheim impressed the heck out of me. You know, both Summersheim kids, whether it's Tori for the girls or Cole with the boys, will play with body parts falling off, and she had a fairly badly sprained ankle that she played the last quarter on and still managed to basically shut off Allie Hunsinger. So even with one leg, she played great defense. I think you'd be very proud of her.
Well, I'm just, you know, anytime you get in the sectional tournament and you get to the weekend, as a coach, I didn't want to lose during the week. It made for a very, very long weekend. But we're into the weekend. We've got the semifinals and the finals. Set this up for us, Walt, and give us our listeners kind of an idea of how you think this thing will play out through the weekend.
Well, I tell you what, first game tonight, you'll have Mitchell. Now, Mitchell came from behind to knock off Heritage Hills in a wild one. They've got a young girl, Burton, that ended up having 24 points in the ball game against Heritage Hills. So she's going to be something to look out for. Pike Central, they're a scrappy ball club. They'll play hard, but I really believe Mitchell would be a little bit favored in that game. Jasper and Vincennes will go at it in game number 2. And you coaching at Jasper all those years and playing at Jasper, you know what it means when Jasper and Vincennes get together. They have played once already this year, and Jasper won that one 51-27. But I tell you, Travis Conner will have the Lady Alices ready to go tonight. Allie Bob is, I think, a 4-year starter for Vincennes. We were able to hold her to 3 points in the earlier contest. The matchups are pretty favorable, but they've got some 3-point shooters like Davika Frederick and Haley Carmine, and if they get hot, they can cause a problem. You know, hopefully Summersheim will be ready to go for the Lady Wildcats tonight. Tori was the leading scorer the first time against Vincennes with 16. Shelby Murder had 10, but Jasper would be a little bit of a favorite there. And if you're looking at Jasper and Mitchell on Saturday evening, then, you know, I would say Jasper a little bit of a favorite, but I was very impressed with the Mitchell team I saw. And you ought to get out there to the cabbie. The time is running out to see Jasper's boys or girls there with the new gym being built. It is a great atmosphere. It's loud and it's crazy. But if you're asking me to predict, probably Jasper and Mitchell in the championship.
Well, I hope to get up to Jasper this weekend and either take in the semifinal or the final if Jasper's in it. Give my support to my former player, Ryan Ernie, who I just know does such an outstanding job. Now, you are truly one of the hardest working men in the business. And last night, Thursday night, was a big boys' night all over the state. And I think Jasper went down to play Mater Dei. And I'm sure I'd be shocked if you didn't do that game.
I was there last night at Evansville, and you know it's always a big game with these two, especially since John Gable, who is now the Jasper coach, won a state championship in 2004 at Mater Dei, moved to Jasper. One of his former players and his former JV coach, Kurt Wildeman's now the head coach there. So there's a little bit of extra juice flowing there. It was a wild one last night, and for a Thursday night, they had a great crowd down there at Evansville. And it was back and forth in the first half. Jasper was able to get a little bit of a lead, but, you know, those first couple of minutes of the third quarter are extremely important. And Modern Day rolls off 10 straight points in the third quarter to start things off. And Jasper, one, were never able to get over that hump, and two, a 2-3 zone by Modern Day that people that watch TV, it reminded me a lot of Jim Boeheim's 2-3 at zone at Syracuse. Jasper was never able to really solve it and weren't able to knock the outside shots down. And tell you what, though, you got to be impressed from Jasper with the play of Mark Giesler. He's really come on strong as of late. He made a number of great plays, had 21 points, which was about 46% of Jasper's offense last night. So he's coming on strong. And if they get any, if they can get some secondary help from Messier or Gobert, they're pretty tough to deal with. Austin Ollis, a sophomore forward, is getting better. But this is a Jasper team that is in many ways, and I've told you before, I really like to watch them. They don't have a whole lot of scoring punch, but they play great defense. They work extraordinarily hard. And I think they may be dangerous come tournament time.
Well, I thought that game would be pretty evenly matched. I really thought that on the road, Modern Day would definitely have the advantage at home. But I thought both teams had played similar as far as their level during the year. And, you know, Jasper has beaten the teams for the most part they should beat, and that's what you want to do. And they have gotten better as time has gone on. But, you know, the one thing that we talked about early in the year, and Coach Gable and his staff have been working on, and they've had a little bit of improvement and success on it, is trying to find a way to get more points out of that perimeter game. And if you put a good 2-3 and that shot's not falling, it makes for a tough situation. I'm sure they're going to see more of it at tournament time, but I really feel like the teams that feed in to the section with Jasper and Vincennes and Washington, I really think that Jasper has a great shot. It'd be nice if they could take the short route to the championship, but they have a great shot at getting him a sectional, but they've got to play well. You know, you've got to play well. Sometimes the team can play well and they're not going to win. But Jasper, if they can play well and shoot the ball decently, they'll have a chance to win any game they play.
Well, they are a team that there's not a whole lot of room for error. They have to play hard. They have to play 100%. If they don't, they'll have trouble with teams like Monday, a team with Mitchell that has struggled. They didn't play their best, and Mitchell was on top of them early. They really have to be fired up and have to be playing hard defensively. From what I've seen, Cole Summersheim, even though he only averages 3.9 points per game, his defense really starts things up. And against Mitchell on Monday, he had 7 steals in that ball game, and each one of those 7 steals led to points in easy transition buckets. So if you can get your defense to make a little offense, that's kind of been the difference, was how Jasper outscored Mitchell 17-2 in the fourth quarter on Monday. Last night, they just were never able to get it going. Modern Day had a little bit too much length and quickness for them. And as you said, they kind of won the ones they're supposed to, but they're going to need to have somebody get hot from the outside. It's been Messier. It's been Gobert in the past. Nolan Aarons off the bench is able to hit also. So probably have to be one of those guys.
You know, Walt, before I let you go, I do want to ask you, Alan Modisen is Du Bois' squad, the Lady Jeeps.
Yes.
Is this a team that can make a run for a championship?
Oh, without a doubt. And honestly, they've got a little easier of a run. They've been rotated now to the sectional at Tecumseh. They'll start off play with Cannleton tonight. And, I mean, they'll have to play well. But if you're asking me to guess, I think they're going to be at home and center.
An employee, you wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site.
Well, it sounds like we've got another technical difficulty. Walt, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm sorry about that. We've had some problems with our third party controller. So go ahead and finish your thought on the Alan Mottis's Jeeps.
Oh, but yes, I was going to say, I don't think, if you're asking me to predict, I think they'll be at home and center. I think that there's no reason they won't be back in the state championship, and I can say that from the broadcasting standpoint. I know Coach Mottis takes it one game at a time, but, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I never bet against Coach Mottis, and I never bet against Nicole Dodd. She's one of the better players in Southern Indiana.
Well, I tell you, once again, great stuff from you, Walt. Like I said, you are the hardest working man in the business. There's nobody harder working, I'll tell you that much. Have you been able to see the replay of the last night's the layup that took the Hoosiers off the top?
I think it would upset me too much, Coach, to watch that. But that loss really did not surprise me that much. I knew that Illinois was a hungry team. They're better than they had played the last month. And I thought we may have taken our foot off the gas pedal a little bit. And I'm not really that surprised by the loss. A lot of parity in the Big Ten this year. I agree with your early assessments. I think that's going to punch Illinois' ticket into the big dance, so to speak. And, you know, IU, if they don't play to their best, it's kind of like what we were talking about with Jasper. IU can beat anybody, but if you look at it from a coaching standpoint, you do see a deficiency or two out there. So they
yeah,
play
it's
their
there,
best.
And don't look at it, because just visualize the parting of the Red Sea with Moses,
yeah.
And that's the lane he had for a layup with 0.9 seconds to win the game. So just don't do it, Walt. Just don't do it. Don't look at it. Hey, you have a great weekend. Hopefully I'll see you at the Cabbie. Love the Cabbie.
Yes.
Hopefully see you up there and watch Coach Ernie and the Wildcats in action this weekend. Thanks for being with us, Walt.
Thank you, Ken.
We're going to go to break before we come back with our next segment. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. Now, Coach, before we get to our next guest, I got one quick question. I can imagine you at IU, you have Jay Laurie on one side of you, Luke Puppy Dog Holes on the other, and I can envision you saying a stupid and display on somebody's part. Did that ever happen for real, or am I just imagining?
I think you're imagining.
I can visualize it, no problem. But hey, let's get to our next guest. On the line we have Indianapolis sports writer Kyle Nettenrip. Kyle, how you doing today?
Hey, great guys. How you guys doing?
Kyle,
good.
It's great to have you on. To tell our listeners just a little. You cover the high school beat for the Indianapolis Star. You do a great job, not only reporting on the games, but the talent that's up in Indianapolis, the coaches, and you also do some wonderful feature articles about the coaches and programs, and it really is a pleasure to have you, and you really are doing a great job with the Star.
Well, I very much appreciate it, and I'm lucky. I enjoy what I do, and there's a lot to cover around here, and it always seems like you've got more stories, you know, during the season than you can even get to, which is a good problem to have, because like you said, the talent up here is fairly ridiculous. And, just Indiana high school basketball, people, you say what you will about the one class system and maybe the interest waning some, but, there's still a lot of passion for it. And, it's a pleasure to be able to cover that from the high school angle.
Well, and I think that's what's so interesting when I started reading some of your articles. Our normal, we have a weekly Indianapolis High School contributor, Don Schulteis, and he alerted me to you and what a great job you were doing covering games and teams and the articles you were writing. So as I will do, I jumped online and started reading some of your articles and your stories, and I was just impressed with the way you put them together and how you tried to bring the passion, the enthusiasm, the excitement, the history. You brought the reader into that. And one of your articles recently was on legendary coach Pat Rady, and he's at Cloverdale, correct?
Correct.
And you did a great article on him, and I had the opportunity when I first got into coaching to coach against him when he was at Terre Haute South. And he truly is the kind of coach that is constantly teaching everything around him. And I know my story with Pat was my first year we went to Terre Haute South, and they beat us. And I was very unhappy with the effort of my Jasper team. And I was a young coach, 28, 29 at the time, first year at Jasper, came over from Washington Catholic. And I went straight to the dressing room. I forgot to shake his hand. And the next year, Terre Haute South came to Jasper, and we beat Terre Haute South, kind of an upset. And Coach Rady came over and shook my hand, and he said, "I'm going to shake your hand because that's the right thing to do, even though you didn't shake mine last year." And it stuck with me forever, and it was a great lesson learned. And as I read the article, it brought back those reminders of how coaches aren't just teaching the game; they're teaching things about life and how to do things correctly. And I applaud you for your stories.
Well, yeah, I think you hit it on the head with Pat Rady. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, I was just curious. I knew Pat just a little bit. You know, we'd conversed, talked a few times, and you know, I just wanted to get out there and kind of see what he was all about. You know, spend a little time with him. You know, I went out for a extended interview one afternoon, and just kind of sat in his office, and basically one of those interviews where it's just kind of like, you know, tell me your life story type of deal. And we sat there for about, you know, 2-3 hours, and you know, he just kind of told me a lot of stuff. You know, a lot of stuff he said he hadn't really you know, talked about before, and it was interesting. And I was just, you know, my own curiosity was just kind of like, what, you know, why is this guy still doing this? You know, he's 70, you know, in his 70s now, long past when most coaches would have hung it up. And you know, what really struck me, you know, not just from talking to him, but other people around him, people who know him, is, you know, he's not in this to break all-time wins record. He's really in it to, you know, to teach the game, to be around the game. You know, he doesn't have any other hobbies. You know, basketball is his hobby. And even when he retires, he said, I asked him, "What are you going to do?" And he said, "Well, I'll probably, you know, get my notebook and go out to high school basketball practices of coaches that I know." And you know, that really, you know, kind of encapsulates, I think, what he's all about. He wants to learn the game, and he wants to teach the game, and that's really who he is. And he's got a strong family that supported him. And, you know, and I think bottom line is, you know, he's a good person. I think he means well, and I think that shows in how long he's been doing this. You know, 49 years is a long time to do anything, you know, let alone coach. So it was a pleasure to get to know him, and I appreciate you saying that about the story.
Well, it's not the only one you've done that you've done a good job with, but for our listeners, can you give us a little bit of background on you and just kind of where you're originally from, what's gotten you where you're at today?
Yeah, sure. I actually grew up in Nebraska, in central Nebraska, until I was about 12, and my dad was actually a high school coach. So I think a lot of the reason why I, you know, do what I do now and enjoy what I do is because I, you know, basically I grew up in a small town of about, you know, 400 people in central Nebraska, and basketball is what the place, you know, revolves around. You know, I remember going to games, you know, when he was coaching, even after he was coaching, and, you know, that place would be packed, and it was a tiny little gym, and the teams weren't even that good, but, you know, that was what, you know, that was what really galvanized the community. And those are things I always look forward to every night, was every Friday was going out to those games, especially at home. And, you know, so I think that's, it's kind of you know, in my blood a little bit to be around basketball, and I've always kind of been around it. You know, I went to we ended up moving to Lincoln, Nebraska, which is where I graduated high school from, and then I went to school at Missouri State, which was Southwest Missouri State at the time, and Steve Alford was actually coaching there at that time, and took the school to the Sweet 16 in 1999, and I was there. And that team was a lot of fun to watch and follow. And I worked, actually, you know, met my wife. We had our first kid down in Springfield, Missouri. And that's another, you know, hometown to me is Springfield. And then we moved here about a little over five years ago, I believe it is now, and have been here since then. So I've covered high school basketball for about 5 years here in Central Indiana. And really, like I said, really enjoy, you know, the storylines and the chance to be around basketball and kind of hopefully tell the stories of what's happening.
Well, right now in Indianapolis and the surrounding area, there's just some great basketball going on, not just in teams, but in talent levels. And as you tweeted earlier, nobody wants to be number one in 4A right now. And Carmel went down last night. And there's just a lot of good players and a lot of good teams. And any night out, if you're not ready to play, especially if you go on the road somewhere, you can get taken out. And I think the thing that maybe a lot of people outside of the Indianapolis area don't realize, because they think of the metropolitan area and you know, people aren't as interested, but Indy basketball is not only strong, but it has a great following as far as fans and people who are interested in what's going on.
Yeah, there is, and I still play a little bit poorly, but but when I go play, you know, I've got some guys I play with, and they're always, you know, they're always out of games, you know, always asking, you know, who's the guy to watch, or, you know, what's the game this week, and, you know, I hear from a lot of people people, you know, just follow the game. The crowds aren't like they are, you know, if you go down to Washington, Princeton, which I, you know, had a chance to do a couple years ago, and it was completely packed and all that, you know, it's not quite like that, you know, not at least, you know, everywhere around here, but you know, last year, North Central, you know, a school that has a great tradition, but they sometimes don't draw the great crowds, but they sold out their gym three times last year. And that's, you know, 5,000 plus seat facility. So, you know, the crowds are good, you know, not across the board everywhere, but there is a big following here. And like you said about the, you know, just the amount of good teams, you know, there's not even that team this year where you're like, you're shocked, you know, when they get upset. You know, there's not really that, you know, number one with a bullet type of team. I think the closest thing to it may be Cathedral. And, of course, they lost, you know, five. I think they're 15-5 now. But, you know, a lot of those losses were without Colin Hartman, you know, their best player. And he's back now. And since he's come back, you know, they have really stepped it up and are playing well. And Carmel's another team, you know, defending champs. Very well coached. You know, Scott Heddy does a great job with them. And you know, they got beat last night, and it was surprising because, you know, when they get a lead, they're up three with about 3 minutes left. You know, normally that's in the bag, you know, for Carmel, the way they play defensively and, you know, the decision-making they make. But missed a few free throws last night, probably took a couple shots they shouldn't have, and, you know, didn't box out on a rebound. It ended up being the game-tying three-pointer, and that, you know, those type of things are very un-Carmel-like, and HSC took advantage of it. And HSC has maybe the Mr. Basketball this year in Zach Irvin. He was, you know, he got 19 last night, and scoring 19 against Carmel is about like scoring 35 on most teams. I mean, those are hard-earned points. And you know, I think he may have taken the lead for Mr. Basketball, but, you know, still some time to sort that out too.
Well, let's talk about a couple of individuals. You mentioned Colin Hartman. Let me ask you about Trey Lyles. Decommitted to IU. He's going out. He's looking at some other places. I think he's been to Louisville. I noticed, and it may have been something that you tweeted or mentioned in your column or article, that he's been to a Butler practice and is also going to go to a Butler game.
Yeah, he just went this week to, I think it was Tuesday, he went over there and watched practice and met with the coaches and sat down with them. And from what I heard, it was a very productive visit. So not to get Butler fans' hopes up completely, but he is planning on going back, I think, next week again. They're not for sure about that based on, you know, their schedule and everything, but they are planning on going back sometime soon. You know, obviously it's in town, so it's not a, doesn't take a huge time commitment anyway, but, I think he's interested, you know, in Butler, which may surprise some people, you know, because of, it looked like Kentucky had maybe taken the lead, maybe has the lead, you know, for all intents and purposes. But I think he's going to start narrowing things down. I think Kentucky will be in that mix, Louisville, Butler, probably Duke. Mike Krzyzewski was up here for the Cathedral game in the city tournament. And, that drew quite a stir. That was also a game Brad Stevens was at. So, you know, Duke is interested. They've offered him. And I would expect Florida probably to get a visit from him and possibly UCLA as well. But, those are probably the schools that are showing the most interest right now and schools that he is and also Louisville. He's, like I said, he's been down there, like you mentioned, just here in the past week or so. Went to the Marquette game, I think it was last Sunday. So, has some interest in Louisville as well. So I would expect him to kind of focus in on those schools I mentioned. And Butler, I think, is in the picture for him.
Well, I was really I was happy, and I was both surprised when I read that. And I haven't talked – Michael Lewis, the assistant at Butler, a former player of mine –
uh-huh.
I haven't talked to – we don't get too specific on who they're recruiting, but it was just pretty exciting – to know that he at least is giving them an honest look. You know, that's the kind of player that comes into your program for a Butler and mixes with what they've got. And if he's, you know, he's committed, that keeps them among the top tier teams in the country. So that would be pretty outstanding for them. Colin Hartman, you mentioned he came back from the injury. Since then, Cathedral has been rolling, doing well. A lot of people over the course of this past year have questioned, did IU take him too soon? Is he ready to play at IU and in the Big Ten? Just quickly, not holding you to anything, quick thoughts on Colin and his overall game for the next level.
Yeah, I don't think you're off base with, people maybe questioning, how he fits into the picture at IU just based on the talent level that they have now. It's definitely different than it was, you know, even when he committed, you know, 2 years ago. You know, they brought in several guys, even in his class, who are a similar position. But, you know, I really do think there's a chance for Colin there. And I think, you know, sometimes there's maybe a misconception, you know, kid from a private school and he maybe not being tough, but he's about as tough as they come, you know, mentally, physically. He had a couple just kind of freak things that happened this year with, you know, the concussion and fell during practice and then had the wrist deal down in Louisville when they were playing Ballard, was having a great game and came down on a, you know, went up for a shot, came down, and, you know, like it happens, you know, kind of just jammed it in the ground and broke a bone. So, but then he's come back and he's played with a brace on it and, you know, probably won't be 100% all year, but, you know, gives them, makes Cathedral a more complete team. And he's not, you know, he's scored pretty well, but he brings a toughness. He guards people well. He shoots the three. Shoots a three well, makes good decisions. You know, I really do think there's a place for him. You know, maybe not, you know, to where he's going to be a 20-point-per-game type of guy, but I think he can play, and I don't even think it'll take that long for him to get on the court. I think there's just going to be a place for him at IU, a role to fill for him, and I think he's, you know, and people forget he's played at Cathedral. You know, they're playing the highest level of competition all the time around here, so he's used to playing top national competition in the summer as well. So I think maybe people have soured on him a little bit, and I don't think that's probably, probably fair. You know, I think he's going to have a nice career at IU.
That's good to hear. What are your thoughts? You know, IU fans are interested in how Devin Davis is doing. What's your thoughts on Devin?
Devin's a guy who is a kind of a junkyard dog type. You know, I think sometimes with his high school team, you know, he needs to be the man to score and do everything. I think maybe it's better for him when he's kind of a, you know, not necessarily a secondary role, but kind of cleaning up the glass, kind of, you know, he can get out and transition. He's got to do a lot of things on his high school team, even ball handling, because they don't – you know, they don't have a real good ball handling team, so he's got to handle a lot of that. That puts a lot on him. I think he's better when he's just kind of free to clean up the glass, which he does well for even for his size. He's undersized at 6'6", but you know, that's something he does especially well. Plays with a lot of energy, plays good defense. He's a spark plug type of guy. The things about Devin, he needs to improve his shooting and his ball handling, and those are areas at his size. He's going to have to play more of a wing probably in college, but those are things he needs to get better at. But, again, I think he's a guy who can fill a role, energy guy, physical. He's strong, quick off the floor. So I think he's going to, you know, again, probably not be a star player right away, but I think he's a guy who can come in, you know, right away and help you.
You know, you get to a lot of games, and you're in a lot of gyms, and you're talking to a lot of coaches, and as you said, you get out among the public playing pickup ball and different things. Who's a player out there, underclassmen, maybe sophomore, freshman level, that people are going to be hearing about that maybe we're not hearing about yet? Is there somebody out there that people are going to be hearing about that you've talked with coaches or seen play or talked with other people, this is a guy that's going to come on the radar screen?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys even in the freshman class who I've started to see and hear about and talk to people about a little bit more. And Kyle Guy from Lawrence Central is one of those guys. He's about a 6'1 guard. Talked to J.R. Shell yesterday a little bit about him and hopefully going to see him here shortly. But I saw him this summer, real good shooter, and even since then, he's shown that he can handle the ball well. He's already got, you know, Butler is he visited over there last week, actually this week for the St. Bonaventure game, and then IU has been in to see him, and Purdue is checking in on him as well. So he's a guy, it's Kyle Guy, a name to remember. Also, a kid that I really like from Tech, you know, same team as Trey Lyles, is C.J. Walker, freshman point guard. Kid plays with a lot of poise, you know, beyond his years. It'll be interesting to see how he progresses. But he was kind of a missing piece, you know, Tech needed, and he's really stepped up to the plate. And I remember early in the year when they beat Cathedral over at Cathedral, hit a three-pointer in the corner to kind of put them ahead and allow them to win that game. That was a really big moment for him, and he just plays with a lot of poise. Had a bit of a flu bug that set him back here a couple weeks ago, but he's had a really nice season. You know, there's a lot of other guys too. You know, that sophomore class is pretty good. You know, I'm curious to see how that class pans out, because you know you don't really see guys really start to fully develop until their junior year unless they're really elite. But you know, those are a couple of guys to kind of keep on the radar and watch for in the future.
Well, Kyle, it was great having you on the show, and we hope to have you again. And I do get up to Indianapolis, and hopefully I'll see you out in one of the gyms and be able to introduce ourselves personally. But before I let you go, I'm going to put you on the spot, because you just have to be put on the spot on the Coach K and Joe show. Who are your three top teams in the Indy area right now? If you look at three teams that you think are going to be there when it's all said and done, maybe they got the most talent, maybe they don't, maybe they're highly ranked right now, maybe they're not. Who's your top three this week?
Oh, that is a great question, and you know, they're not all going to be there at the end. That's a problem because they'll knock each other out in the sectional. But if you're asking me today, you know, right now, who the I'm not so sure Cathedral's not the best team. You know, looking at it right now, I know they don't have the best record at 15-5, but you know, what I've seen them do the last couple weeks, this is kind of what we expected out of them from the beginning of the season. So if I was to project it right now, I think they're the team to beat. I think even with last night's loss, I think Carmel's still probably number two. I don't think that the way they played down the stretch was indicative of how they normally play. So I'd put them number two. And then number three is probably a toss-up between Hamilton, Southeastern, and Tech. And that next tier it's hard. You know, Pike is very good as well, North Central. But I like what I saw at HSC last night, and they've got a star player in Zach Irvin, and you need star players in the tournament, as you know. So, it's a razor thin margin between some of these teams, but those would be my three right now.
Well, great stuff, Kyle. And for our people in the Indianapolis area, get out to those high school games. You are watching the best players, the Division I players of the future, and you're going to be able to see what they can do and assess their talents. And, Kyle, great to have you. I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, definitely. Have me on anytime, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Well, certainly enjoyed it. We're going to go to break. When we get back, we'll be talking with somebody from Purdue, Mr. Blackman, who takes care of some of the talk that goes on at Purdue. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm very excited about this segment because, you know, we have a lot of IU on here, and it's time to class the place up with a little Purdue. And we've got the Purdue basketball color analyst. We've got Rob Blackman on the line. Rob, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, guys. Thanks for having me today.
Well, I'll tell you, Rob, I'm going to give you – I'm just tired of Joe this morning because he's just been all over me about that IU loss at Illinois last night. But
it's been funny.
With him being a Purdue fan, I am going to give you a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because you are – an Evansville Aces graduate, I believe.
That is correct. Thank you for mentioning that. I graduated Evansville in the spring of 1993, and during my four-year stay at U of E, we were awfully good in men's basketball. We had a heck of a run during that stretch there from the 1988 basically to 1993. So, yeah, I'm a U of E grad and very proud of that, so thanks for bringing that up.
Well, the Aces were very strong during that period and also had a great run with their baseball program as well as Andy Bennis and my brother John Schulteis pitched down in that during that period in the late 80s, early 90s. And, well, it's great to have you on the show. And really, it is fair because a lot of our listeners, they're Big Ten people, they're IU people, but they're Purdue people too. And it helps us, and I know Joe – we'll be jumping in here, chomping at the bit to talk some Purdue basketball. But you're around for the football. You're around for the baseball. So we can get a little bit of everything today from Rob. So let's just start with the basketball. I'm going to start it out, and I know Joe's going to jump right in.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, Purdue on the court, and I'm not going to hold you to anything, but there just seems to be no consistency in offense, no consistent shooters. A lot of times the move gets made, and it looks like they just pop it up there hoping that it goes in.
Yeah, we have really struggled shooting the basketball. It's interesting, Coach, because our three-point shooting percentage, as crazy as this may sound, has actually improved during the Big Ten play. The problem is it was so bad and so poor before conference play started, there really was no place to go but up. So we have improved in that category, but as a caveat, I must say we were so terrible to begin with, we just had to get better. But, you know, we were 0-for-10 shooting a three-point shot at Penn State Tuesday night, still found a way to win that game. And earlier in the season against Xavier at home, we were 0-for-17. Now, that's significant. I'm talking about three-point shots. That's significant because the last time Purdue had gone an entire game without making a three-point shot was 1992, and now we've done it twice in the same season. So, I mean, that just emphasizes your point. Our perimeter shooting just has not been very good, and quite frankly, we really have only one perimeter shooting threat, and that's DJ Bird. And when he has an off night as a shooter, then we just don't have any other outside shooting weapons, which conversely has made us very easy to guard, especially in Big Ten play. So, That's been the biggest Achilles heel of this club, I think, without question, is the poor perimeter shooting. And a second thing is we're starting three true freshmen, and our first guy off the bench is a redshirt freshman. So we're a young team, and inconsistency comes with having a young club. So it's been a trying season for Coach Painter and the staff. I think the good news is there are better days ahead with this young group, but that's no real consolation right now because I know they're just trying to find a way to win games here currently in the month of February.
You know, Robin, I agree with that. As a coach and as someone who's around the program as much as you are, we understand that when you have young people and they can say, well, you should have recruited better the year before, whatever it might be, but when you have young people, it takes time, especially in a big-time conference like the Big Ten. And I think that the Purdue fan, I understand the frustration that they have. I really do. But this team, add another player or two over the course of the next year or two, and you could have a heck of a team in 3 years. I think the tough thing that I saw after the IU shellacking, just a breakdown in all areas of the game, it was the first time that I felt like I'd seen a Matt Painter team get out-hustled. Not that they didn't hustle, but they got out-hustled. Was after that game, somebody said, what do you think? And I said, well, the hardest thing for Matt Painter is going to get his players to accept this as just one game and move forward and get into that and get ready to play that next game. With young guys, that can be really tough. It didn't help that they had to go to Northwestern. Not a great team, but the system's a little different. The facility's not the best. Just kind of everything that you don't want to happen. Would have been nice if they had the Penn State game before the Northwestern game. But I really think that's what happened. They couldn't let go of what they'd just gone through, and that happens with a young team.
And the thing, too, you're right on with your assessment. The other thing that really put Purdue in a bad spot is you go to Northwestern, and 3 minutes into the game, you're down 12-0. If that game starts, maybe 8-6 or 10-6, I think you feel like you're not swimming upstream the rest of the way, and that didn't happen. You've just gotten blown out by your biggest rival at home, and now on the road you're down 12-0 before you have a chance to work up a sweat. So you're right. That was just bad. Back-to-back bad basketball games. The timing couldn't have been any worse for Purdue, but hey, you said it. It's a young club. These are learning lessons. As the old saying goes, and you well know, Coach, the best thing about freshmen is they eventually become sophomores.
Absolutely.
So you're taking your lumps with these young guys right now and hoping that next year, better things are waiting for you.
Rob, I'm a self-professed knucklehead from Golden Black Illustrated. I wear that badge proudly. The thing I've noticed is, for instance, the last game, even though we did, we beat Penn State, I think I checked it out. We were 17 for 30 or something with the freshmen and like 3 for 18 or something with the upperclassmen. Are DJ Bird and Tyrone Johnson possibly pressing too hard? And then also, was Tyrone and the three Johnsons, were their main shot a one-handed runner in the lane as you saw them coming up the ranks in high school and et cetera?
It's interesting because now I can't speak to Anthony Johnson. I did not see him play in high school. But I did see Tyrone and Ronnie. I do a lot of high school basketball here in the Indianapolis area. So I saw those guys. I saw Ronnie Johnson make 5 3-pointers in a game last year. I saw Tyrone shoot the ball well from the perimeter also in high school. So why all of a sudden when they get to the college level, they're struggling to shoot the perimeter shot, I'm not for certain. The other thing to that is Tyrone, to start the year, if you'll remember, actually was really shooting the ball well from the perimeter. He spent some time this summer with Billy Keller, who's a former Boilermaker, former Indiana Pacer, and now is actually the Indiana Pacers shooting coach. He actually spent some time with Tyrone working on a shot, and when the season started, it really looked good from the perimeter, and for whatever reason, he's regressed since about mid-December. I don't know the reason for that. Maybe we need to get Billy Keller back to Mackey Arena for a day to spend a day with him. But
again,
it goes back to the fact that those three players you just mentioned, their main offensive weapon is the runner in the lane, the ability to drive the ball to the paint and shoot that little teardrop shot. That's all well and good, except in the Big Ten, obviously these coaches are paid pretty well, and they know the same thing I'm telling you guys. So we're scouted very well. They know that to play those guys for the drive on defense, and that's what everyone does. So back to the original thought, you know, until our perimeter shooting improves, we're going to have a tough time winning games because everyone in our league has us scouted as a club that's not going to shoot perimeter shots outside of DJ Bird. And that, hey, when you're limited offensively and the other team knows it, I mean, it makes it awful tough on you.
Now, I've
not
seen the
incoming. You know, Rob, really interesting about how you look at that with these freshmen, we had the same situation with IU at the beginning of the year with Yogi Ferrell. He did not have a perimeter shot. His feet were met. He wasn't getting set. He wasn't following through. The game was just going so fast, and he wasn't adjusting. Now, he was penetrating, but a lot of his penetrations were, we're going to penetrate, they're going to come at me, and we're going to kick out to that three, and Jordy Halls or whoever's going to hit that shot, which goes back to you can do that if those guys are going to hit that shot. But as time went on, they closed that middle off, and they said, we're not going to just give it to Yogi, and if he does go down, we're going to make him finish sometimes. So he started looking at that perimeter shot, and he's got his feet set, and he's got his motion. So I think what I'm pointing to is with young players, it can be just little things that mentally change their game. They pick up bad habits in how they shoot the ball. They it's easier to put the ball in the dribble than to try to move and get open and get a good shot. But their teardrops, it looks like to me, and guys, Joe or Robbie, I mean, you can correct me, but it looks like even on their little teardrop shot, they're not even shooting it. They're just kind of tossing it up there at the rim, hoping, God, let it go in.
Yeah, they're not shooting it with a lot of confidence. I don't care where you're shooting it from the floor. All three of those guys have not had a great deal of confidence. I would agree, and I don't think it's just the teardrop. To me, and again, I have the luxury of seeing them every day in practice. Every shot they're taking, whether it's a teardrop or a 19-footer or a free throw, they're just kind of throwing it up there and, as you said, praying to the good Lord above that it finds a way to go in the basket. So, and, hey, you guys know the only way to fix that is to get into the gym on your own and fix it. I mean, the only way to get your confidence up is to see the ball go through the basket, and the way you do that is doing it on your own and spending
Absolutely.
Time in the gym. So, that's you know, that's the dilemma that faces our club right now.
Now, you know, we need some perimeter shooting, and I've not seen the three incoming freshmen play at all. Do we have much in that coming in at all?
Kendall Stevens, that guy is a big time shooter. Now, I say that hoping that I think you guys probably know, for those who haven't followed it, he had a torn labrum.
Yep.
An injury that has ended his high school season early, unfortunately. But I am assuming that the surgery goes well, the rehab goes well, and he's back to normal come the summertime. If that is the case, he is one of those guys they call a dead-eye shooter. I mean, when he catches and lets it fly, you have a pretty good high percentage opportunity that ball's going through the rim. And that's, you know, that's going to help this team next year spread the floor because they're going to need a guy that can – they can shoot the ball from the perimeter. But, yes, that is his specialty, actually, is catch and shoot from deep. So you'll be happy to know, Joe, that we do have a guy coming that can shoot it.
That's good.
Well, I'm still a big Matt Painter fan. I don't have a close relationship with him, but I've known him for years when he was still a college player and working the camps. And I think that, you know, some guys start hitting some shots, it totally changes how good the coach is, that's for sure. Hey, Rob, let's switch gears real quickly. I had a question from a listener. Wanted to get your thoughts on the football recruiting class that Purdue has been able to put together in a short time. Some, of course, were on the line, but what Coach Hazel's been able to do, and just get your thoughts on the recruiting class that Purdue's put together.
Sure. It's kind of a twofold thing. Good news, bad news, probably the better way to put it. The bad news is that it's the 11th-ranked recruiting class in the Big Ten. The good news is that's the same kind of class as Joe Tiller had when he first started at Purdue. He was bringing in these no-name guys like Drew Brees that no one had ever heard of, and of course we know the rest of the story there. So just because you have a poorly ranked class doesn't mean you can't have some guys that can ultimately help you win a Big Ten championship, because that's what happened under Coach Tiller. What I can tell you about is in this year's class, it's very running back heavy. There's no surprise in that. Daryl Hazel, when he was at Kent State, was a big proponent of running the football. He believes that's how you win football games, which, hey, for our fans, is going to obviously be a little bit of a different style of football. We got so used under Coach Tiller to the basketball on grass offense, and we saw that a little bit under Coach Hope, too, when Gary Nord was calling the plays as the offensive coordinator. I think you're going to see Purdue go to more of a double tight end, a traditional two-back pro set, and really be run heavy offensively, and that's why there was a big emphasis put on recruiting running backs. I can't tell you that I know a whole lot about each and individual player that was recruited. I know this, the young man out of Terre Haute, Danny Etling, the quarterback. The feeling around the football program is this guy is the quarterback of the future. I mean, he is, I hate to say, the next Drew Brees, because that's not fair to him. He hasn't even taken a snap in college, but he is the next guy that they feel like can add to that cradle of quarterback. So if there's one recruit you want to keep a close eye on, it would be Danny Etling. He's already on campus. He enrolled mid-year, for the spring semester, so he can participate in spring football. I would not be surprised, Purdue fans, if he is not at some point next year as a true freshman playing, maybe not the starting quarterback, but at least getting some significant snaps, because I think they're that high on him that they think he can be a real difference maker.
Rob, in past shows, Joe and other listeners have made comments about Purdue's overall athletic program and that they feel like they try to run it on the cheap, that if they were willing to put in some more bucks and commit more to it, they could see that step up out of the second tier and back into the first tier in several different things on the athletic end. Is that your feeling? Is it a money thing? We're doing the best we can with the resources we're given to do it, but yeah, it would be nice if we get some more. And again, I know that I don't want to put you in a bad position here, but I mean, how do you answer people such as Joe who have mentioned before they think that Purdue runs things on the cheap?
Well, I would give you two facts. Number one is, there's only 8 schools in the country that the athletic department is completely self-sufficient, and Purdue is one of them. Purdue receives no money from the general overall student body on the Purdue campus. So everything that Purdue generates monetarily for the athletic department is just that, generated by the athletic department through either private donations or fundraising. So that automatically puts you in a little bit of a behind the eight ball with everybody else in the country, because you're one of only 8 schools that do it that way. But the second thing I would say is, it's tough to argue that Purdue's on the cheap, at least in the last couple of years, because of the investments that have been made. You know, Purdue just dumped $100 million into the Mackey Arena renovation project, so we now have one of the nicest basketball facilities in the Big Ten, if not the nicest. We just built a brand-new baseball facility. And for good reason, our team won the Big Ten championship in baseball last year for the first time in over 100 years. So they got a brand new field and baseball facility. And I think it was a big statement when Daryl Hazel was hired this past winter, and they paid him $2 million. I mean, Purdue's never had a $2 million head football coach. So if you want to make the argument about Purdue being on the cheap. Yeah, there may have been times in the past that I think that's a fair and adequate argument, but I'd say in the last 3 to 4 years, Purdue's done its best to try to erase that moniker with the amount of money they've spent on the facilities and more importantly, paying the head football coach $2 million, because that's something Purdue's never done.
Well, great answer. I mean, that's what we're looking for, those answers. So it sounds like to me, for those who question it, they are starting to look at those things and say, we got to step it up a little bit, and that doesn't happen overnight. You do it prudently. You look at some of the mistakes that IU made over the course of the last decade. As an IU alum, I feel like a lot of money was thrown away, and we paid a lot of coaches a lot of money, and didn't get anything in return and are still paying him. Hopefully not much longer, but you're not talking tens of thousands, you're talking millions of dollars. Now, another hat that Rob Blackman wears is the Boilermakers baseball. You just mentioned it. You do the play-by-play for the Boilers in baseball, Big Ten champs. What are we going to see from the Boilers this year in baseball?
That is a great question. We open the season next weekend down in Florida, and I cannot wait. I won't be with them because I'm still on the basketball circuit, but I can't wait to see how the first month of the season or so goes for this club, mainly because we either graduated or had so many guys leave the program because they were drafted as junior eligible players that we're basically starting from scratch. I mean, we had 15 seniors last year, not all who played, but the majority of them played, and then our three best juniors were all drafted. So we're really a totally brand-new-looking club with a lot of new faces and a lot of young guys having to play some important roles. So I don't really know. I don't think Coach Doug Schreiber, our head coach, even really knows what to expect from this group. The pitching will be good, which is always the key. You know, in the Big Ten, you really need three solid starters because you play Big Ten weekends of three games apiece against the competition. So you need three guys you know you can count on going into conference weekends. I think the pitching is going to be pretty good. But I'm not sure about our offense, Coach. I don't know where we're going to generate offense. We had the luxury last year of having guys like Kevin Pulecki and Cameron Perkins and guys that were drafted in the top 10 rounds that they were similar to American League Baseball. They could give you the big hits at any time, you know, that home run when you had to have it late in the game. We don't have that anymore. We're going to have to go back to playing some small ball, and I think that's what Doug Schreiber prefers to do anyway. But you know, last year was such a unique year. I said it earlier, Purdue had gone over 100 years without winning the Big Ten championship, and they finally did it. They've been so close so many times. They finished second a handful of times, and they finally got over the hump, and they finally won the Big Ten championship last year. And they did it with a veteran club who kind of had built their whole careers to winning that Big Ten championship and making their name in Purdue baseball history. So now that they did it, and it literally is they're gone, they're out the door, and now you're bringing in a whole brand new group of guys. So I don't have a good answer for you. Ask me again in a month. I think we have a chance to be pretty good, but that's if the young players can step it up. If not, it could be a long season for the Boilermakers.
Well, you know, you hit it on the head though. If you think you've got a little pitching or whatever, You don't know where the offense is going to come from. You got to play small ball, and you said it, and that's, I'm sure, at least how they'll start things. Now, as we end this segment, Rob, I got to ask you, honestly, these guys are going down. They're getting ready to start the baseball season down in Florida. You can't be there. Aren't you a little sad that you can't be down there to watch baseball in the sun?
I was joking with a friend the other day. This is really the first time, in the last 6 or 7 years, that I have been a little disappointed I'm not with baseball to start the season, only because typically at this time of the year we're so good in basketball. You know, we're right there at the top of the Big Ten standings, and your every game really means something because you're battling for the Big Ten championship. So baseball's on a back burner. You know, this year's a little different. We've struggled so much in basketball. I'm kind of ready for the baseball season to get going. So, yeah, I'm a little bit sad this year that I'm not going to be in Florida with those guys next weekend.
Well, there's still an opportunity for Matt Painter and his guys to get some improvement, win some games, get in that Big Ten tournament, try to do something. But, time is starting to run short. Confidence, I'm sure, is at a premium right now, especially with those young guys. But we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. Rob, it was great to have you. I hope you come back and talk Purdue with us, especially when we get into the baseball season as well. Enjoyed having you.
Hey, enjoy the coach, and Joe, thank you for having me, guys.
All right, well, we're going to go to break. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family, cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean, modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part. We're just the guys to do it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, real quickly.
I lost you.
Yeah, Coach?
I've got you now, but I've lost you there for a second.
Got a text from one of our good sponsors, Idea Fusion Media's Josh Houchin, and he wants to know, what does Coach K think about Oladipo's windmill at the end of the Michigan game?
It was pretty amazing, but it wasn't necessary. And, you know, I'm not going to go any more into it than that, because whatever he was thinking, I'm not sure. The game was over. It was clear that both sides had accepted the final score, and it wasn't necessary, unless he was just having fun and celebrating the victory and wanting to show off his athleticism. I really hope it wasn't meant in any way to rub it in to Michigan, because they'll remember that when they end up going to Michigan.
And a question from Brent from Odin, Indiana. And his question is, Coach, I don't know if you know much about the 1A sectional, including Ligoti, North Davies, and Bar Eve, but wanted to get your opinion on who you feel the favorite is.
Oh, I tell you what, I do know about that sectional, and we will be having some upcoming guests to talk a little bit of that. That's one of the best sectionals in Southern Indiana, but in the state,
if you're
talking about the class basketball setup. North Davies has got a really good club. And then Ligoti, who's, I believe, dropped their last two games, had been playing pretty well, defending champs, state champs. And Bar Eve has an outstanding club. I had an opportunity to go watch Bar Eve and Ligoti at Bar Eve. So that's a great sectional. And I think right now, honestly, I've got to give Bar Eve the favorite status, because they recently beat North Davies, and I believe it was at North Davies too. And Ligoti has lost a couple games in a row. So something is not clicking right now for Coach Wagoner's team and the Ligoti Lions, but I'm sure they'll get that straightened out. But we hope to have one or two of those coaches on to talk about that sectional, as well as maybe one of the play-by-play people as well. So, it's a great sectional. I'm going to give Bar Eve the favorite status at this point, with North Davies and Ligoti just right there.
And, you know, if you haven't been to a Ligoti Bar Eve North Davies sectional, the thing I like about it is that, other than Washington, they've not lost any of their core group there from when the single class tournament. So they really haven't felt the effects, you know, of class basketball, other than maybe when you go to the regional, you know, and plus the fact that they probably happy they didn't have Washington involved with the Zeller Empire that went there for a while. But, you know, those towns really backed their team just like most communities did back in the 70s and early 80s.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And in the one class system, the sectional was held at Washington. And I know when I was at Washington Catholic, it was Washington Catholic, Ligoti, Bar Eve, North Davies, Shoals. And I think Pike Central might have been in there for a little while. But my point is, it goes back to what you said. I mean, that has stayed a pretty consistent group, other than a couple teams, and you've got the same core traditions and fan base. And as Kyle Nedenrip told us earlier, in those outlying areas, when he was growing up in Nebraska, in Southern Indiana, that is still the central part of your community, your high school teams, the high school sporting events, and the bragging rights when you win. The Buggy Bowl between North Davies and Bar Eve, the big matchup between Ligoti and Bar Eve, Ligoti-North Davies, all those things. And at one time when Washington Catholic was playing well, Washington Catholic was in that mix. But that's a great tournament. And if you just love basketball, or you long to see and feel or take your kids to something that what it used to be like, that's still a sectional to go to and watch and feel the enthusiasm and the sheer passion that each fan base has for its team. And it's good basketball, too. It's real good basketball.
I just got another question, but it's from my wife. She said, what are the chances you will bring the show to Miami? She highly recommends it, because, of course, that's where she's at this week.
You know the great thing about the Coach K and Joe show, because of how we work this through the Internet, we can go anywhere. So if someone has a business or a location, they'd love to see us come out and bring the show there. We'd love to do that. I know looking at some remote show locations coming up soon. We're getting our guest list planned for that, and hopefully we'll have some people live in the audience, and it can be a lot of fun. It doesn't take a whole lot for us to move the show around, and Miami would be great. You know, Joe, a lot of people wonder, what happened to our Super Bowl commercial? And all I told them was, I know we had it done. We had a great Super Bowl commercial to promote the show. Somewhere along the line, as production manager, you forgot to get that taken care of.
Well, you know, I had a lot of things going on last week. And Monday, you know, I was a little late, though. But I have one more question, and then we're done with questions, unless your wife, Janet, asks us questions like my wife just did. It's from Tom in Santa Claus. Can you give us any – do you know any new info on Scott Rolen?
As I said early in the show, I have not – gotten any new information on Scott Rolen other than what Ned Colletti has said. He's saying that the Dodgers have not talked with Scott. Now, he didn't say that the Dodgers were no longer interested in Scott Rolen. They hadn't had any conversations, and they were preparing to go with what they had. But we all know that there's a lot of backroom conversations that go on. And it's not necessarily with Scott Rolen involved. It's with his agents and Ned Colletti's staff. So we have not heard. The fact that he has not said I'm retiring leaves me believing that he's going to come back and play again. But, again, I haven't talked with Scott in recent weeks. We texted each other a couple weeks ago about a couple things. I did not ask him about what he was doing baseball-wise. But that question is probably coming up pretty soon. Again, as I said early in the show, I hope that Scott will come back and play another year, because I still think he has a lot to give to the sport. And I know he's got young kids, but I still think they're at that age, and I've had young kids too, that as time goes on, they don't remember that much where they're at. In the coming years, the next few years, they'll start to really – grab hold of their memories and what they've been doing. But I think him still playing is not going to have an adverse effect on his family. So let's hope that we hear something soon. Maybe this weekend. We know pitchers and catchers are going to start reporting. So I'm sure that everybody involved would like to have an idea of the direction they're going in the next couple weeks. Again, a lot of good stuff going on in the sports world. Tough loss last night for the Hoosiers. Tough loss for Kansas earlier in the week. Tough loss up and down the top 20. Butler was able to rebound and get a win over St. Bonaventure. They're still ranked 14th and playing, I think, particularly well. They are going to be somebody that our listeners in the Indiana area are going to have a lot of fun watching the direction that Butler goes in the coming weeks as we get ready for the tournament. Okay, we're going to go to break. When we get back, we're going to have Kurt Gooksell. We're going to have the rant, and we're going to probably get all over Joe's case. So join us, listeners. If you have a question or a comment or you want to call in and get all over Joe's case, do it. We're going to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee.
You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
We should mate.
What?
Date. I said we should date sometime, you know, socially. Go out and kick it. Are you okay?
I'm fine. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
Yeah, you know, in some cultures, they only eat vomit. I've never been there, but I read about it in a book.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And it's time for the rant. Let's rant, people. I do want to mention one thing, you know, in fairness. You know, I've talked about the oversignings and this, that, and the other thing, you know. And I just read this week where Purdue is actually also looking into an additional signee and not sure, you know, the cloudiness of where that scholarship will come. But, you know, in all fairness, I want to call a spade and, you know, these situations, you know, bother me, and it bothers me even in a situation like that. Even though I don't like Purdue's current win-loss situation, I don't like those situations. Coach K, Kurt, your opinion.
I just wanted to make a comment before we get Kurt all stirred up, and we will get him stirred up.
No, you're not. I'm nice and calm today.
About the lead-in with the dodgeball. That's why, Joe, I know you can relate with the comment he made and the girl saying she threw up a little bit in her mouth. That's why I never asked girls out. I waited for them to ask me out. I was always a little bit leery about the response I might get.
Yeah, I would be too.
Kurt, the sky is falling. The dam is breaking. Every seismic rock is breaking apart. Earthquakes are happening all over the world. IU got beat on a layup with 0.9 seconds left by Illinois.
Wide open layup.
Yeah, it was wide open. You couldn't get an easier look in the history of basketball. But of course, it was Green's fault. He got out-coached, and if Bobby would have been there, it would have never happened. If there's one pet peeve, and you know I'm a coach guy, I cannot stand the so-and-so got out-coached. That line, that is like fingers on a chalkboard to me. So Green out-coached John Beilein the other night. And the previous 20 games out of 23, Green out-coached the other guy, but he just didn't out-coach John Gross last night. As a coach, you've got to hate that term.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd join in with the group that says he got out coached. I'm not sure that's what I saw. I saw a team that did not defend on the perimeter the way they're capable of defending. I saw a team that hurried and took ill-advised shots down the stretch. I saw a team that didn't do what they were supposed to do to defend the last out-of-bounds play. That's what I really saw.
Yeah.
Thing that I would have questioned at all, and this is a coach's prerogative. Two timeouts left. Do you use them or do you not use them? I always like to use my timeouts, but you don't have to. But I wouldn't go. I'm with you, Kurt. I didn't see glaring coaching weaknesses there. And you know, Coach Gross, he had no timeouts at the end. They couldn't even draw anything up. They just went off what they've worked on in practice. IU didn't handle it. People didn't switch properly. They got out of position. No one protected the basket. They got beat on absolutely, absolutely the most wide open 0.9 second layup that I've ever seen.
Well, there's a couple things with that. I'm of the belief that when Oladipo blocked that shot, that ball was flying out of bounds, and they stopped the clock when that ball was in midair.
Good point.
That ball, you know, and we may be heading to overtime, but since the ball's flying through the air, they stopped it at 0.9. Okay, it's not the official deal, and that's not what that game hinged. And I'm of the belief, and I'm a broadcaster. I don't coach, but I watch a lot of basketball. I equate it to a fast break and a defender trying to get back. Don't you, as a defender, run back in a fast break, get your chin under the rim, and protect that basket at all costs. I don't care if the guy's going to dish to the wing, he's going to pull up from 10, you get your chin underneath that rim and protect the basket. If I'm going to question one thing about that last setup, why not have a 7-footer back protecting that goal and let everybody catch the ball out in front of you around the free throw line and let them get a shot off with 0.9 seconds to go? That's a couple of times, and I think you made this point, that they did not defend the basket in a couple of different games. The Butler game comes to mind, and laughing. What you're doing is with the guy at the basket, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are eliminating that ball dive, and you are also eliminating a lob, which they very easily could have ran too.
You're right on. And I think that I tried to make the point at the beginning of the show. You've got to defend from the basket out. First of all, the three-pointer doesn't beat you. Any point beats you. So you got to defend from the basket out. I thought they over... And again, I don't know what the strategy was. There was no timeout to set up anything. I mean, I guess you trust, at that point, he trusts his guys as
that's exactly right.
Execute and do what they're supposed to do. They were out of position. There should have been someone defending the basket. Now, is that where you call a timeout? Maybe, and say, listen, guys, I didn't want to call this timeout because I didn't want them to set something up, but we're not in position to defend the basket. Even Will Sheehy, who was guarding the guy on the far end of the court, he was too far over. He should have been in help side. He can always go get the basketball, and he can defend a cutter to the basket. But I thought we over-defended, IU over-defended, getting the ball in the three-point area, because all you want to do is not let him get a good look. I mean, nine-tenths of a second is nine-tenths of a second. You don't have much time to get it and do anything. So you want to get a hand in their face and make it tough. We totally were out of position. And Cody Zeller, in my opinion, he got himself too deep or too far out, towards the ball. He missed anybody behind him. He really should have been in position to defend the basket. We've lost two out of three games because we didn't have somebody defending the basket. Butler?
I thought Cody, and whoever was with him, it wasn't where they got screened. It's just the simple concept of defense between you and the offensive player in the basket would have in 0.9 tenths of a second would have stopped anything. But they looked around like they didn't know. It wasn't even a screen that the guy slipped. It was almost like just a jab step or a cut behind the defense. And those guys looked at each other like,
even looking towards defending anything. If you go to our Facebook page and play the video, you can just see our guys are standing looking at what I say space, and he cuts behind the defense, which never, ever should have happened in that case, because you know what, Kurt? If he gets the ball and anybody causes him to hesitate at all, the game's over.
Well,
I mean, there's no time for a hesitation at all. It's got to be get it and put it up. And you say, well, he took it. He did. He had enough time to take a step. But if anyone pulls him up, he doesn't have time to do anything but launch it. And just poorly, poorly, poorly played at the end.
You got that 8-point lead, and two of your older guys are shooting the ball with plenty of shot clock left, and they weren't exactly the best shots in the world either. And that's, again, and that goes by, I give it to Coach Green, and any coach will do this. You trust those older guys, just like he trusted Zeller and those guys to make that defensive play again. But just time and time again, not taking the time on offense and just shooting bad shots out of those two guys, that probably is more alarming than that ball dive at the end, because people get beat every night on a buzzer beater. Maybe not that easy, but some of that stuff to happen inside the game. And I know it's a weekly thing about getting the ball inside. I'm not always ready to jump on that, and I don't necessarily agree with that a lot of times. But last night, 4-6 from your big post player. And that can go on Green, and that can go on Zeller. I don't know, but it's that's a disconnect right there. You know, he takes 13 shots, okay, that's a normal night, and I don't complain very much. But six shots, that's a little on the low side.
And if you went back to the early shows, and I know Don Schulteis, our Indy contributor, is listening today. He knows we've talked before about Indiana. My concern with Indiana has been, and will, and still continues, is they get lost in the play of the game. They get lost in it. They get lost in the play, and they forget to dictate the play. They start dribbling too much. They take quick shots. And, Kurt, that's where I would have called a timeout. If I was coaching and I'd have screwed up a lot of things, I know, I'd have called a timeout after that first launch of a shot we didn't need. I'd have called a timeout and said, listen, we've got the lead. We've got the ball. We've got the shot clock. We don't need to be launching it up and wasting seconds. Instead of an open shot, let's get the best shot. That's what we're working for. And if we can't find what we want, get it inside to Zeller and let him take it to the hoop. And maybe Cody's got some fault here because he won't step up and demand the basketball. You know, sometimes you got to do that. And if you demand it and get in some people's faces, sooner or later they're going to get you the basketball. But I'm just not sure where the consistency is going to come from on this team, not at home. I know everybody, all the announcers all over the world, IU Assembly Hall, that's the greatest venue for basketball. We're so tough. But you know what? Tournament's not played at Assembly Hall, and IU has not beaten a ranked team nor a quality team on the road this year.
Well, no, but I can look at it the other way and say you're not going to play on somebody else's home court either. But that
but you're
going to
play on the road. You're not playing at home. And when you get in that NCAA tournament, everything changes even more. You can say it. I'll respect that you say it, but you've got to win on the road, and you've got to learn to control the game on the road.
Yes, yes. There's no doubt about it because you weren't playing Michigan State, Ohio State, or Butler on the road last night. That's when you've got to get. They're scuffed 2-7. They're ready to pack it in. They had, you know, he didn't start Brandon Paul the last couple games because they had some turmoil with their team. And you go in there, and you kind of just throw your jersey out, and why in the world – with some guys that really haven't won anything yet, think that they can go in. And I think that's why they think, well, I can take these outside shots because we're going to win in the end anyway because we're who we are. And they just didn't value the basketball. They didn't value a good shot, and they lost on the road. So, I mean, now go to Ohio State and see what that's going to be like.
I've got a question here from Glenn, and he wants to know, do we really think Cody Zeller is ready to take the next step? I'll let you start.
It's not for me to decide. If those NBA guys think so, and I think he's great. I think he's really, really good. I think he can. I think if he thinks he's ready and the NBA guys think he's ready, and we all think just because the guy's 7 foot that he should be scoring 30 points a game. That Michigan game, he did everything possible in that game to help Indiana win that game, whether it be chasing down loose balls, getting on the floor, follow-up dunk. It's hard being a big man. Name the best center in the NBA right now. You'd be hard-pressed to name a guy because the games are dominated by wings and point guards. The days of a guy in the post scoring all those points are over. Does a guy need to get more than six shots? Yeah, but to think he's going to go out and score 25, 30 points consistently, that's not going to happen the way the game is made up. But I think he is good enough right now. Again, because centers don't dominate, they just need them to play. I think he'll be fine in the NBA. Would he be better off with another year? Probably so, but that's up to him.
Well, I know on Twitter a couple days ago, Seth Davis, basketball analyst, mentioned that it's, you know, how physical the game is, and it's just not that easy to score. And I, especially on the inside, Kurt, how many games have we seen NBA, college, and even on the high school level where the officials let them play on the inside, I mean physically, beating the crap out of each other. You don't get any clean looks at the basket.
Well, how many times, you know how tough it was when Farouk played for you? How tough it is for a big guy to get things done? He gets hammered inside, and the official, you go, sir, Mr. Official, would you please do something about him getting pounded? Their reaction to you was, coach, He's big enough to handle it. He can do it. He can take it. That's not part of the game, but that's the mentality that those big guys face every night. They get double-teamed. They get pounded on. And maybe in the pros, he gets freed up a little bit because it is a less physical game. Because my point is, it's not easy for a big man when everybody thinks it is, because they have all kinds of obstacles that they have to contend with, whether it be the officiating or the players just beating on them.
Yeah, and I would just tell our listeners to watch some college games this weekend and really focus on the physical play that's going on inside the paint area, and maybe you can get a bigger understanding, greater understanding of just how difficult it is. What used to be, I get the ball inside and I lay it in, now I'm going to get hit three times before I even go up with the shot. Will Sheehy, Kurt, defend him, don't defend him, it doesn't matter to me either way. His game, his mental approach to the game has to get better if he's going to be the player that everybody says he is. I'm not on his bandwagon yet. Yes, he can hit some shots, but just like the dunk last night, come on, should it have been called? I don't know if it should have been called, but was it necessary for his reaction? He didn't dunk over the guy. The guy was 3 feet out of the lane. He took a lob pass and dunked it. Go down and play defense.
Well, yeah, you love guys' enthusiasm like that. It's hard to maybe rein guys back, but just play the game. I know he's got a chip on his shoulder. They wrote an article about, you know, how he won't talk to any of the media because this and that and the other. He wasn't highly recruited out of high school, and he's got the chip. Just play. That's why, you know, that's another thing I love about Zeller. He just plays.
Yeah, he does.
He just goes and goes. And they've always been like that. You know, Tyler Zeller, Luke Zeller, if anybody could act a fool and clown during high school because they were beating people like a drum, it could be those kids. But they never did. I watched them play all the time. I did their games. Those guys act like good, respectable ball players. And I'm not, you know, I'm not getting on Sheehy, but I mean, just don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, he hurt his team. He hurt his team in that situation. And here's my feeling: show enthusiasm. Give a high five.
Yeah.
Put a fist up once in a while.
Yeah.
But you don't need to get in anybody's face. You don't need to
celebrate
put
with your teammates.
Yeah, you don't need to put three fingers up and stick it by your eye and go up to a guy and put it in. Enjoy the game with your team. I love what you just said. Enjoy it with your teammates. You know, I'm a passionate guy, an emotional guy. I like to show it. But show it with your teammates. Have fun out there. Be who you are. But you don't need to taunt the other team. And it hurt the team. Okay, let's jump out of the IU pit and let's talk about Bill Walton. I don't know if you heard any of his comments. He did the UCLA game. And I mean that guy, Bill Howland. Oh, Coach Howland was just UCLA and Coach Howland. He just, oh my gosh, he just ripped them and ripped them and ripped them. I mean, personally got in to Howland, and you know, you don't have to be politically correct, I agree, but you know, as Bill can do sometimes, he may have taken it a little bit far than it should have been. Poetic justice, UCLA wins at the buzzer, but I think if Coach Wooden was alive today, he'd say, now William, we need to talk a little bit. You're taking this too far. I don't know if you got to hear anything.
No, I didn't hear anything, but you know, the UCLA glory, they're over. That's why I didn't like a few years ago when the Indiana guys, you know, had to throw their two cents in the way things were being done, you know. It's just a different time. But if you're going to be an analyst on one of those games or whatever and, you know, you're out there, you can't just have your way with somebody like that, you know. But, you know, well, I guess we're probably guilty right now. So whatever.
How'd your Thursday night hoops go?
I've watched a lot of bad basketball, to be honest with you, this week. It's been with a couple of girls' games. I've never seen two games in a doubleheader and in such excruciating fashion that I've seen Southridge's girls, who were really good, and Forest Park losing the other night. Southridge's girls, they're up 8 with 2 minutes, up 4 with a minute to go. They lose to North Posey. Then in the nightcap, Forest Park is up 3
with 10 seconds to go. Perry Central drives inside. They're going to settle for the two and get a quick foul. But instead, they miss the two on the baseline. The ball rolls out to the Perry Central center, who's really good. You know, she's coached by Bill Dickerson. We all know Bill. This girl, who's a great player, had 24 in the game, but she's a 6'2 inside player, throws up a three at the buzzer. The ball hits the front of the rim. We all think the game's over. Forest Park wins. The ball bounces 8 feet up in the air and bounces straight down.
Oh.
We're going to overtime. We're going to overtime. And Perry Central won in overtime. So if the Shoppers, they lose the big lead late. Forest Park is tied at the horn by a ball that bounces straight up in the air on some soft rims and drops straight down. I mean, it couldn't be any worse for those two coaches, Greg Werner and Marty Niehaus, that night. Then last night, the classic example of one team executing, doing what their coach wants to another team, saying that they're just going to roll the ball out there because we're pretty good and we don't care. We don't have respect for the other team. Southridge 13-2, Wood 5-13. Southridge gets beat by four because they can't handle the deliberate play that Wood has when they get the ball on the offensive end. They're 0-for-10 from three in the first quarter of the game. They're down 5-4 and end up losing the game because they shoot 25% because they don't get the ball inside. They think they're too talented and they're going to do what they want to do, and they're going to throw off threes. And Wood just kept at it and ran their stuff, and they win the game. I mean, sometimes upsets happen and stuff. But last night, and Coach Rouse agrees with me, I'm not saying anything. He didn't tell his guys. That can't happen if you're going to try to win a sectional. So to answer your question simply, it was not a good night last night. But Wood, I give all the credit to Wood Memorial because they run a nice spread game. And what I liked about that was they do that every game, no matter who the opponent. Where some of these teams, I think, you know, they play well, they try to get it inside and do their stuff against good teams, but when they think they can kind of just roll the ball out there, then they get free and easy and go to a different type of game instead of playing the same game every time you go out, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. But that's the great thing about this game. Teams that should don't. Teams that should never play the way they do play that way. Players that you expect to take over don't. Players that you never thought would hit a shot, hit it. I mean, that's what's great about the game. And even though we go into, like, IU at Illinois, and I know some people say, well, I really thought Illinois would pull the upset. Let's face it. Most people didn't really think that. They thought if IU went and played the way they're capable, Illinois is not going to beat them. But and these girls' games are boys' games. And this weekend, the girls' tournament takes center stage, and you've got some teams that say, I should be in it right now, and they're not. And you got other teams that they'd be home for the weekend. They're in it. So what's your weekend look like, Kurt?
Well, I'm going to have Northeast Du Bois. They've won 10 straight sectionals no matter where they put them. And it bears it out. I mean, you know, they're in the smallest class, but it doesn't matter. They beat all three Du Bois County teams this year in girls basketball because they're good. They're a good program, and they would be a program that could compete for a sectional regional under the old system. In fact, they didn't vote for the craziness that we got now. So I have all the respect for that program. And they're a team, Coach Modise, you coached against Coach when you coached the boys. They're a system. They don't make mistakes. He doesn't tolerate it, and in turn, they've had success. And if there's one program that I cover, boys, girls, they simply buy in. And I know that's a product of respect because they've done it before. They've got the proof, but they have no my question that staff or anything, and that they're just a really enjoyable program to follow because they play the game right, they get good shots, they play good defense. So I'm looking forward to seeing them advance in the tournament, playing girls basketball. Ryan Ernie's got his team in the semifinals. They had a hard-fought win over Washington, a great game right down to the end. And I know Ryan and those guys are looking for a sectional championship because they're pretty good. So Du Bois and Jasper are left up here in the girls.
Well, it's going to be a great weekend if you're following girls high school basketball in the state of Indiana, it's going to be a great weekend. If you're following college basketball, of course it is. And probably the last thing I want to cover with Kurt before we end the show for the week, pitchers and catchers. coming into Major League Baseball spring training, the Mariners fork out huge money for a pitcher they think can, lead them forward. I just don't buy it, Kurt. That's a lot of money to give one guy when that team needs a lot of things. The Mariners need a lot of pieces to that puzzle.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's the age-old debate, whether, you know, you pay for guys that go out there every day or you pay for a guy that can win you a game every fourth or fifth day and, you know, can be the hammer and the ace of that starting rotation. And my thing with them, that's one thing. If you're right at the cusp of, you know, winning that pennant or going to the World Series, but they got a lot of work to do. And I don't know, throwing that much money to a guy, you know, okay, we'll finish fourth instead of fifth because we got this guy on the hill. So, yeah, it's a lot of money. So, I don't know.
I mean, when I think about it, and I'm not a baseball expert by any means. I love the game. I love watching it. I love to follow all the pieces of it on and off the field. But I've seen the Mariners do this before with some pitchers, bring on a big salary pitcher hoping that he's going to somehow take him forward, and it hasn't worked for him. Only ended up trading him towards the deadline to get rid of him before they have to do something else with his contract. They just have so many pieces to that puzzle to clean it up out there, and I just don't know if a pitcher is the guy to do it. Now, looking at the pitchers and catchers coming in and baseball getting started, who's your favorite for the coming year in MLB, in the American League and the National League?
Well, I'm always liking the Reds, the way they've set their team up. I really like the way they're doing things, and I like the Tigers. I like the Angels. Those two teams a lot. I mean, and I think this, that same way with this, going back to this basketball, you know, this coach got out-coached. It comes down to players, and the Angels, Tigers, Reds, a few of those teams like that, they got a lot of horses. And, I can't wait. I love this time of season. I know you guys were touching on the Roland situation before the last break. What have you heard?
As I mentioned to the question from the listener, I talked to Scott about 2 weeks ago, but it was not baseball related. I'll probably try coming up if we don't hear anything by the end of the weekend. But you know, the only thing I've heard, you know, I don't go by a sports writer's column.
No.
You
know, oh, God, no.
Don't listen to the guy who's trying to pull somebody official comments out by making something up. If it doesn't come directly from Walt Jocketty or Ned Colletti or Scott Rowland, then I give it a grain of salt, and I don't buy into it. I think Ned Colletti has come out and said that he has not been having any talks with Scott Rowland. That doesn't mean somebody at the Dodgers isn't, but he's not, and that the way he looks at it, they seem to be going forward with the situation they have. Walt Jocketty, other than I got the arbitration taken care of, I hope to get Scott's situation settled. That was last weekend. I've not heard it. I haven't seen anything come across there. So some people that I've talked to that know no more than you or I think he's trying to get a 2-year deal. I don't think I would be shocked if Scott would be holding out for a 2-year deal. He may be holding out or wanting an option for a second year, but I really believe at this point in Scott's career, based on everything he's said in the paper, everything he's told me, if he wants to play, he wants to commit to one good year and then see where it goes from there. I don't think that would be the stumbling block, but that's my opinion. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it's really odd because the good players on these teams are going to camp tomorrow or, you know, going in the next couple of days. I can't believe that they have not worked something out, both on Roland's end or the Reds' end. I tend to think that the holdup here is there's been reports that there are some people in the Reds organization that are still would like to be committed to Roland being their guy at third base, providing he's healthy and he can play, because they know what he brings to that team.
Yeah.
And then there's some people going, we got to go forward with Todd Frazier, whoever, because we can't rely on Roland. And I think maybe on Scott's end, you know, if they can commit to me to being a starter,
then I want to come back. But if not, maybe I don't want to. And that's not a knock on him. If he's going to be a bench player and a pinch hitter, maybe he doesn't want to come back, and that's great for him. I mean, that's his prerogative. So I think that may be the rub where the Reds as an organization are kind of split on this, and they don't know which way they want to go, thus he in limbo and the team in limbo.
Yeah,
I mean that. I'm throwing that out. I have no idea because. But other than that, I would thought somebody in either camp would have made a decision by now. Because I mean, if you're Baker and you're the team actual on the field, they got to know what they have to work with and how they want to approach it. And there are some saying, you know, that if Roland comes back, knowing how Baker likes to play older guys and the veterans, that they may go into the situation thinking that Frazier, somebody else, is their guy, but knowing Dusty, and he's the guy that's running the team on a daily basis, he's going to play who he wants to play, and that might set organization back a little bit. So I don't know if there's complete trust between some of the guys up front in the office and Baker on how Dusty would handle a situation like this. In their situation, it's not a bad thing. Of, you know, it's not a malcontent player, a headstrong manager. It's just a weird dynamic between the player and the organization at this point. I'm just making
no, seriously, that's a good point of view, and I think it could be right on. The one thing I'll add, for those of us who know Scott well, and
right.
I think I know him pretty well, it doesn't shock me that we haven't heard anything. Scott's kind of a guy that, you know, he has a timetable, and he's not interested in making a big splash about it or kowtow down to what the reporters want to be able to print. When he's ready to make the announcement, or they're ready to make the announcement, they'll make it. And that's just probably, I wouldn't be shocked if he's got his feet off or his shoes off, and he's got his feet in the pool, and he's holding one of his kids and talking on the phone to his agent at the same time. So it could work either way. Last thing before we end the show for the week, Celtics. Garnett, trade rumors, supposedly he exercised his no-trade clause, scored his 25,000th point. They hammered the Lakers. I know you're a big Celtics guy. Rondo's out. What's the hope for that team in Boston who has a tremendous tradition and a great fan base?
Well, they've reeled off, I think, six in a row without Rondo. Would I love to have Rondo? Yeah, but there's something meshing right now. Without him there, and they're in the seventh spot in the East right now, and I guess, you know, right now you got to roll and you ask questions later, you know, and maybe you stand pat right now and don't disrupt the team. But I tell you what, as much as I love the Celtics and obviously a fan, you know, we get the Pacers on Fox Sports Midwest right now, and they're an unbelievable team to watch. They've won five in a row. They've won like 15 straight home games. Can you talk about a team that buys in? And a lot of people don't like NBA basketball, but I think it's great, especially with the way they play. Frank Vogel's a defensive guy. They got Hibbert in the middle playing great defense. This Paul George, you talk about a guy that plays hard, just keeps his mouth shut. He's an all-star. They're without Granger. I don't know where Granger's going to fit into this team when he comes back, but they are just getting it done right now under Vogel, and they stress a lot of little things. He talks about them being a good passing team. I know that doesn't thrill a lot of fans, but they just take basketball to the simplest form in a game that's very flashy to the outsider, and that's why they're winning. They're fun to watch, and Vogel's done a great job with that team because he's a basketball kind of guy, and that's a good story for Indiana to be that good with, you know, maybe a lot of players that, you know,
Kurt, they were patient, and maybe some people don't like that either. They knew that they had a mess in Indianapolis a few years ago. The Pacers knew it. They had to get rid of some people. They had thugs. They had guys that weren't going to play hard. They had guys that were bad community people, and they were patiently trying to clean it up and put the right pieces together. And I think when they made the change at their head coaching spot, they gave
Jim O'Brien.
Yeah, they gave him every opportunity to do what he needed to do, and he just wasn't clicking. I thought he was way too statistics heavy and took guys out of the games who were playing well and not playing. But Vogel's done a great job. All the pieces have come together, and I think it's an organization that didn't go out and try to spend its way. It just prudently tried to get things done the right way. And I know a lot of Pacer fans struggled with them for a while there, but I think they've got a good organization, a good team, and not just for this year, but for several years to come.
Well, you know, when Larry Bird was still there running things, and if there's a guy that you'd, you know, take the word of who was evaluating, trying to put the pieces together, I would trust him than more than anybody else in the NBA, knowing what we know about Larry Bird and how he's done things down through his basketball career. So, you know, some of the things as a fan probably didn't make sense, why he wants this guy, why he wants to get rid of this coach, why he wants to set up things the way he's doing it. But if you're going to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, give Larry Bird the benefit of the doubt, and they're getting the fruits of his labor and his thinking by having a good team right now. So hopefully they can keep it going. Just, you know, heck, Indiana's the basketball capital of the world. Why not have a good NBA team?
Absolutely, I agree. Well, folks, I'll tell you what, we're going to get ready to end the show. Great show again. Good stuff from Kurt and all of our guests. If you are listening on the podcast, remember you can go to Facebook and like our page and follow us there over the weekend and through the week. We're on Twitter. You can follow us there. And we're always looking for your comments, your questions, good, bad, or ugly. We'll take them. We'll listen to them. And we'll give you a response. And that could be good, bad, or ugly. But appreciate having you. We'll look forward to seeing you next week, talking to you again. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Pins Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.